When We Got to the Seventh is a series of standalone podcasts that tell the story of an encounter with the seventh something. It could be the seventh anything, anywhere, anytime, and features compelling characters and intriguing stories. It's written and performed by me, Emma Clark. This story is called All You Can Do Is Embrace It. I'm one of life's romantics. I make no bones about it. And I won't apologise for it either. When you're born like this, there's nothing you can do about it. All you can do is embrace it. Don't fight it. I'm a very emotional woman, and I enjoy the company of men. And I think they like me. Well, I hope they do. I like a moonlit walk on a beach just the same as the next woman. I like foot rubs. I'm human. Things were very difficult after George died. He'd been ill for a while, so it wasn't a shock, but nothing quite prepares you, does it? You're never quite ready to be told, to get that phone call, to see his face like that. Nothing can prepare you for how you'll feel. I mean, looking at him in that bed with all those tubes poking out of him, he'd gone. I know that. He wasn't there anymore. That body lying there was not my husband. I don't know where he'd gone. I'm not a very philosophical type of person, but he'd gone somewhere. His body was like an overcoat, something he'd just taken off. So looking at him, I didn't know where he was. I knew he'd gone, obviously. I'm not stupid. I knew he was dead. Oh, the thud of that feeling. The next few weeks were very hard. You know, once people have stopped coming round and think you're all right and carry on as normal, it was difficult. I missed him. I missed the big lump of him in bed, in his chair, in the kitchen, fiddling about on the worktop with a bit of engine or vacuum cleaner. He was always mending something. He was very mechanically minded, was George. Good with his hands, you know. The days were long and the telly was boring and I got sick of the iPad the kids bought me to keep me occupied. I mean, honestly, what's a woman like me going to do with Candy Crush Saga? I'm a woman of passion. I'm not an idiot. I used to try anything to get the days to feel shorter. I'd split up my shopping so I'd have an excuse to go to the supermarket more than once a week. I told everyone I decided to buy fresh, but the real reason was because I didn't know what to do with myself. I almost got depressed. I didn't want people faffing around me. I didn't want the children on at me telling me I should join a group, play badminton, or God forbid, join a choir. I mean, seriously. I didn't want the grandchildren coming over all the time. I mean, I love them, obviously, but you don't want miserable teenagers drooped about the place when you're not feeling too chippy yourself. What you don't need when you're grieving is a goth hanging around. So I knew I had to do something, very practical, resourceful. I knew the only way out of feeling miserable was to meet people. Meet a man. Now, this is probably where you're going to judge me. No, sod it, what do I care? I signed up for a dating app. Everybody said I'd done it too quickly and that I hadn't given myself time to grieve. And what about George? Didn't I miss him? Of course I bloody missed him. That's why I couldn't bear to be alone anymore. As I say, I'm a very giving, loving woman. Anyway, my situation, 3 weeks felt like a very long time. So I sorted out a profile pic. Thank you, iPad. And wrote a little, you know, thing about myself and then put it online. I didn't expect to meet the man of my dreams, but I'd be lying if I said I hadn't hoped. Now, what you might not know about dating apps is that when you're on there with all your face and your life hanging out, people make assumptions and you get some very strange people approaching you. And oh, the pictures they send you. What I didn't bank on was men in the 70s sending me pictures of the, you know, bits. hanging down all shrivelled like a turkey neck. Oh, it knocked me sick, it did. I'm not deluded. I know what I look like. I'm under no illusions. And I was very honest about my age and situation. I didn't see the point in dressing it up. I even posted a no-makeup selfie. Admittedly, I was wearing sunglasses, but I was au naturel. I do have standards, though. And flabby old men who look like they'd one coffin fit away from an embolism are not my cup of tea. I had messages off six of them. Six? Some of them telling me about their wives. Some divorced, mostly dead. Their money, as if I'm a gold digger. I don't need the money, I've got my own, thank you very much. And their health problems. Oh, they were boring. But the seventh. Oh, the seventh. He was called Alejandro, and he was very polite. He complimented me on my hair, and he was the perfect gentleman. Gallant, even. I mean, obviously I was attracted to his profile picture. Who wouldn't be? He was stripped to the waist and very tanned. He had a six-pack. George never had a six-pack. Apart from when he was buying cans of beer. But Alejandro was beautiful. After the first six, I admit, I changed the parameters of my search and lowered the age range I was after a bit. Alejandro was 21. I'm 70. So you can understand why it might have raised eyebrows. I didn't think he'd be interested in me, not really, not like that. But I just played along with it, seeing where it might end up. What else was I going to do? What else did I have to fill my time? Back episodes of Countdown? Oh, I don't think so. So I went for it. What did I have to lose? Well, to cut a very long story short, we hit it off. We exchanged messages, and then before I knew it, we were messaging each other every day. Then twice a day. Then he phoned me. He phoned me, and that's when it started. His voice was husky and young and full of dusty sunshine and sand. He was from Tunisia. His family kept goats. They were a very rural family. And he had a lovely laugh. You can tell a lot about a person from the laugh, and I loved his. I loved thinking I'd made him feel like that, feel happy. He told me I had a very sexy voice, and of course I thought he was pulling my leg. "You have sexy voice," he said. "What, me?" I said. And I laughed, and he laughed, and we were laughing together. And I felt better. That was it. I felt better. It got to the point where he'd ring me in the morning to see how I was feeling at the start of every day. Can you imagine what it feels like to have somebody do that for you? And he'd ring me in the evening and he'd talk to me until I had to go to sleep. He'd tell me everything. And he'd ask me to tell him everything. I'm not going to tell you exactly what we talked about, nor the content of every conversation we had, but put it this way, I felt 50 years younger. He made me feel things I hadn't felt for years, and things I didn't even, if I'm honest, ever feel with George. He made me do things I've never done before. It felt fantastic. So inevitably, we reached a point where the only logical next step was that we should meet. He was in Tunisia, I was here. What were we going to do? So I went out there. He couldn't afford to come over here. I told the family I was taking a little holiday. They wanted to know who I was going with. Told me I couldn't cope on my own.
that really got on my nerves, whining on. "I'm not a child," I said. "I'm a perfectly capable woman."
They wanted to know what I was going to do when I got there. I told them I'd sit by the pool and read a book. I told them I'd go and look at caves, markets, museums, anything to make the nosy buggers shut up. I bought some new clothes. And just in case, new underwear. You can't blame me, can you? And I went. He met me at the airport. He was leaning against a wall looking at his phone and I recognised him straight away. His dark hair was flopping over his eyes and he was smiling at something. He looked up and his eyes shone and he smiled and he ran towards me with his arms outstretched. Can you imagine? Me? The next few days were a whirlwind. I know that sounds a bit cliched, but it was. He stayed with me in the hotel and we went out and we walked on the beach at night and we went up a mountain and we lay on the sand and we listened to the sea and we fell in love. There's no other way to put it. I loved him. I couldn't bear the thought of leaving it like that, so I did something that people said later was very stupid. I asked him to marry me. What you've got to understand is that at my age, you don't want to hang about. You've got no time to waste. You just have to crack on and hope for the best. Life's too short for regrets. And he said yes. He said he'd love to be my husband. He said he'd been waiting for me all his life, which admittedly hadn't been very long, but when you know it's right, isn't it? Was I surprised he didn't introduce me to his family? No. He's a very private person, and what we had was too delicate and fragile to be gawped at by other people. I understood it completely. I said I'd set him up in a little business so he could buy a shop or something so he could live, and I said I'd transfer the money after the wedding. I mean, I'm not daft. I knew there'd be hell to pay if I didn't tell my family. Besides, I am not a secretive woman. I wear my heart on my sleeve and I didn't want to be sneaking around telling lies. So I rang Catherine, my eldest and the most difficult, and told her, well, let's just say she wasn't best pleased. Next thing I know, I'm getting phone calls from everybody. Simon, my son, his bitch wife, Katie, the grandchildren, who, it has to be said, were actually very supportive. I told Simon and Catherine that I didn't want any fuss and they needn't bother themselves about being witnesses or coming to the wedding or anything because the airfare's expensive and I didn't want them tapping me up for hotel bills and whatnot. So I said, don't come. I pretended the phone signal dropped and hung up. I didn't want to get involved in a long conversation about it. I'd made up my mind and I was going to marry Alejandro. So we did what we had to do and I had to ask for permission from the ambassador to get married. That's what you have to do, you see. I had to prove that George was dead. Fortunately, I had a copy of his death certificate in my bag, so that was that sorted. I bought Alejandro a pair of good trousers and a shirt and some shoes, and we were on cloud nine. He'd kiss my hand and look at me, saying, you're beautiful." His English wasn't brilliant, but we managed to get by. Sometimes you don't need words to communicate, not when you're in love. Anyway, that's when it all started to go pear-shaped. We got a call from the embassy saying, could we come in and see them? I thought it was all very strange, but okay, so along we went. It's very grand, the embassy, lots of marble and rugs, statues of naked people holding torches. We waited in this reception type area until we were summoned. I felt very nervous, I don't know why, but these places set you on edge, don't they? You know, officialdom. So after a few minutes, they called my name and we went in. The ambassador was there behind this big walnut desk and was the kind of woman you describe as a type. She had chunky jewellery and she needed a good orthodontist. Well, that's by the by. Anyway, she wanted to know why we wanted to get married. "Because I love him," I said. "And do you love her?" she asked Alejandro. Can you imagine? I've never been so humiliated in my life asking a question like that. But he nodded, bless him, and took hold of my hand. "What have you got in common?" she wanted to know. Well, actually, we shared a lot of interests. Alejandro had introduced me to all sorts of things he was interested in, so I said, "We share a love of rap music." That shut her up. But it was true, actually. I'm very open-minded music-wise. She wanted to know if I'd met his family. No. She wanted to know if he'd met my family. No. She wanted to know if I'd met any of his friends. No. Had he met my friends? No. And then she smiled at me and I could have knocked her stupid buck teeth right down a smug throat. "I'm sorry," she said, "but I don't believe this marriage is genuine. You are 70 and recently bereaved. He is 21 and is unemployed. I cannot agree to allow you to marry. I do not believe it is in your best interests." Can you imagine? I felt as though I'd been kicked. Alejandro looked at me with his big brown eyes full of sadness and he just got up and walked out. He couldn't take it. He was so upset. After I'd given that woman a piece of my mind, I went after him. But I couldn't find him. It's a busy city. I tried ringing him. I tried messaging him. There was lots of traffic and dust and people and I stood there on the pavement not knowing what to do with myself. But nothing. I think he was heartbroken. And as I know, the only way to deal with a broken heart is to move on. Have I tried contacting him? Yes. Have I sent him money for the shop? Yes. Have I given up hope? Never. Were my family relieved? Very. I've not seen them for a while, actually. I didn't want the questions, the intrusion into my feelings. I didn't want the third degree. So, it wasn't meant to be. But I know he's out there, my Alejandro. Somewhere in the world. What we shared. Well, it was beautiful. And nobody can ever take that away from me. No law. No bureaucrat. That's mine, that love. And it always will be.
You've been listening to a When We Got to the Seventh podcast story. It was written and performed by me, Emma Clark, and was produced by Rick Watson. Our theme music is composed by Francesco Giovanangelo. Find out more about us. Just visit theseventh.uk for bonus material and a whole bunch of stuff. You can listen to When We Got to the Seventh wherever you get your podcasts. We really hope you enjoy this podcast. See you next time on When We Got to the Seventh.